Mornings, ESPN.
Yes.
That's football today.
From Scoutsy, here's Jeremy Green.
Not today on your Football Thursday edition of the Football Today. I'm your host slash producer, Jay Soderberg. I am joined by your host slash guest, Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you?
I'm quite well. You know what? I'm doing really well in one regard, and I'm a little disturbed in another regard that I need to deal with you. First of all, my buddy is taking me to the Penguin game tonight. Last game ever at the Igloo.
Okay.
Big deal for me. You know, all the old Pens are coming back. There's all kinds of ceremonies. My man Lemieux is going to be there. I'm pretty psyched about that. Just found out. But on a little more disturbing note, I listened to the Fantasy Football podcast today as I was taking the kids to daycare.
Yep.
And I don't know if you recall this conversation, but it came up about other podcasts. Oh, you know, somebody got an email. You know, hey, guys, what are some other podcasts we should listen to while you guys are only churning them out every 6 weeks or whatever?
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
You do see where I'm going with this. The Football Today podcast never came up. Not like, hey, you know, there's another good one here that I produce, Football Today.
Well, we mentioned that they should listen to all of the ESPN podcasts.
Sort
of. That would be this podcast.
Sort of. But I'm starting to know where your loyalties lie, buddy.
You know, everyone says this. You'll learn quickly that you're all my children. I all love you equally.
Ooh,
I don't play favorites.
I'm the redheaded stepchild.
Are you Obama fired up?
Are you fired up?
Don't go throwing quotes at me, trying to divert it, you know, get me off the subject. Those guys were bad enough they didn't bring it up. They know the force that we are out there threatening them. And then you didn't get my back. You didn't help us out. You didn't help the cause.
Listen, I will always have your back. I will always have your back, Matt Williamson.
All right,
and
buddy.
Speaking of having your back, One more piece of business before we get into today's show. The Superfan Super Mock Draft will be happening. We're still in the details. So Superfans, you should be looking for an email from me soon saying I'm still working things out. But I think...
A note to you other Superfans, the Jags are fired up. They're getting proactive.
They are. The Jags are Jim Moore fired up.
Fired up.
They're already trying to trade their pick.
They're wheeling and dealing.
Just so you know. Not to let out the secret to all the other super fans, but the Jags are looking to trade down. Anyway, it does appear that the Superfan Super Mock Draft will happen probably the Monday and the Tuesday before the actual draft on April 22nd. So that's something to look forward to.
I hope I can be involved in that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of work for me, but it will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, nobody cares about that.
What will be a lot of work for you, Mr. Williamson, is the three-point stance today, where we'll be joined by former Giants great wide receiver Amani Toomer, who off the air gave me some gentle razzing about a Super Bowl I have no recollection about. We'll also
show you the ring.
He didn't show me the ring. Unlike others who have been here, Justin Tuck, he did not show me the ring. Bobby Darin, author of Draft Season and also a contributor to Rivals.com, will be here and be talking about the draft. And we'll also be joined by Tom Martinez, a quarterback coach who's worked with the likes of Tom Brady and Jamarcus Russell. So that should be an interesting interview as well.
Yeah, looking forward to all three of them.
Let's get into the 3 point stance.
This is the 3 point stance. 3 point stance.
Well, now we are joined by Amani Toomer. Lucky enough to have him here with us, the great wide receiver from the New York Giants. Amani, how's things going?
Oh, they're going great.
Good, good. I can't help myself. I got to touch on your old division. The timing's perfect. Donovan is now a Redskin. What are you shocked about there? Tell us a little bit about how that affects trading within the division. You know, is that blow you away? What's your take on that whole subject right now?
Personally, I just think it's a bad idea. I mean, you don't trade a franchise quarterback, first of all, then to trade him in the division, it just makes little to no sense. And I don't want anybody to get the illusion that, you know, Andy Reid did Donovan McNabb any favors, because if you really wanted to do him a favor, he would have kept him, but he didn't. So it's business, it's football. I don't think he's really trying to make any friends and all that stuff with lifelong friends with Donovan McNabb. And it's a tough situation that I hope, you know, Donovan McNabb can really come back from.
Yeah, I hear you. And can you elaborate a little bit more just to the average listener out there? Why is it such a bad idea? I mean, I think people are out there saying, you're probably going to run to this guy anyways. I understand you play him twice a year within the division. Why is that such a terrible idea, in your opinion?
It's the terrible because the way the divisions are set up and the way the playoff situation is set up, division wins count for more than just conference wins. And conference wins count for more than wins against AFC teams. So the more division wins you have, the better chance you have to go to the playoffs. So, like if you have the same record, but you know, for example, if you have the same record with another team in another division, then the first thing they count is the division wins. So when you're playing a team that you that has a player that's not only familiar with your personnel, but knows all the weaknesses and all the strengths of your defensive backs, your offensive players, knows your system inside and out, I bet you when they have their 2-minute drill, Donovan McNabb's going to be on the sideline calling out the plays because, you know, they don't change the systems just because one player leaves.
Sure. See, I don't think everybody realizes exactly all those intricacies. But just to play devil's advocate with you on that subject.
Oh, let's do it.
Bill Belichick traded Drew Bledsoe to the Bills, knowing exactly what he was getting rid of. And to me, I don't think anybody knows Donovan McNabb as well as Andy Reid. And if I was Donovan McNabb, I would take this as a slap in the face as to say, hey, we would rather play against them than with them. Do you think that's legit?
First of all, you're absolutely right. But Donovan McNabb is twice the quarterback as Drew Bledsoe. I mean, there's no comparison, really. That's the answer to the first part of your question. The second part is it really is a slap in the face. He's basically saying, you know what? We think so little of you that we're willing to put our playoff lives against you twice every year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of players out there. I mean, I'm a scout, and when I write them up, sometimes I say, I understand this guy's going to go in the first round, but I'd rather play against him than with him. And that's what I saw from this trade was, I know you so well, I know exactly how to attack you as well. You're going to know his strengths and weaknesses better than any other coach in the league, although he knows your personnel better as well. But that's all I saw was, man, I want to play against you twice a year.
Yeah, it's a situation that nobody really wants to be in, and it's a situation that, you know, now you're going to have people in Philadelphia that are going to break away and kind of have sympathy towards Donovan McNabb because of the way he was treated by the Eagles organization.
That's a good point. And let's get into a little more scouting terms here. And I mentioned that's my background as a scout.
Mm-hmm.
You are in your career, you are often labeled as a possession receiver, you know, it's for better or worse. And I think many people out there consider that a negative connotation. Personally, I don't. I mean, I'll take Chris Carter. I'll take you. I'll take Derek Mason. Those guys can be my receivers every Sunday and every Monday night. Explain that term to me or to the listeners out there, why that's considered a bad thing, and why that's a misnomer, really. I'm sure that's the way you feel about it.
Well, I mean, I wasn't a possession receiver. I played the X position, which is the split end, which is the receiver that usually runs the longer routes, the deep ends, the post, the streaks. Through the heart and the meat of my career, the most productive years, I was the X receiver, which was not a possession receiver. But towards the end of my career, when I think the people realized me and paid more attention to me, what I was doing was a lot of the underneath stuff, mid-range stuff, you know, the outs and things like that, the comebacks. And the difference between a possession receiver and that's the answer to the first part of your question. The difference between a possession receiver and a regular receiver and a deep threat is basically you think the guy's slow. And I mean, to put it in really basic terms, a slow receiver that can catch is a possession receiver. And those guys are a dime a dozen in the league. And that's why everybody wants to be known. And all the receivers will fight you tooth and nail when you call them a possession receiver, because that's going to give you the connotation that you're slow.
Sort of like you just did to me right now.
Yes. I'm fighting you tooth and nail. There's no way I was ever consider me a slow receiver.
Agreed. But my thoughts are, being a possession receiver from where I sit isn't a bad connotation. If you look at it as a Derek Mason at this stage of his career, where he's going to get me 3rd and 9 on 3rd and 8. And I felt like you were like that at the end of your career, too. And I mean it as a compliment. It's not necessarily you're not going to always take the top off a defense like a Randy Moss. You know, people slow down and become possession receivers, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Hines Ward, Chris Carter, those guys are great players.
Yeah, but, you know, you're talking about the end of their career dictating their whole career. So that's one of the things that kind of people don't really like, you know, because it just says that you don't have the athletic ability to be a deep threat, and which wasn't the case for me, and it probably definitely wasn't the case for Chris Carter. He has good speed, and he showed it throughout his career. But, you know, people are sensitive about their athletic ability, you know, because they're always measured up against other people. And when you call somebody a possession receiver, you better be prepared to back up what you're trying to say.
I hear you. Let's talk a little more receiver play, and it's pretty much common knowledge or well-renowned that making the jump, you know, the draft is right around the corner, making the jump from a draft pick into a camp as a receiver and contributing right away is as hard as any position in the league. Most people out there probably don't know why. Why is it so hard? They just run routes. It's not that hard. They don't have to do much. Please explain to them why it is such a difficult transition.
I'd say because the coverages are so much different. Because the players you play against are so much different. Let me go back. The coverages are different because there's so many new coverages that they play in college that they play in college, but they don't play them effectively. And when you get to the NFL, they play these coverages effectively. And they play them like they're supposed to be played. They don't hold out stuff, because in college they hold out stuff because they don't have the time to go through every intricate detail. You know, they don't have them for as long. You know, they don't have them for as long in the classroom and all this stuff. So they don't have time. In pros, they have plenty of time to do that. And then they never play against the caliber of players. In college, you play against maybe one or two players that are capable of playing in the NFL your entire career. I played against two. Luckily, I had one on my team. So you got to realize there's a huge jump. When you go in terms of just not only the skill and the mindset of the game, but also in the physical attributes of the players they're playing against.
Well, I mean, from where I sit, there's also a very strong mental side to it, too. I mean, you guys are running option routes based on coverage that you have to diagnose X amount of steps into your route. I mean, that's very, very difficult to do while still being on page with a new quarterback as a rookie, getting off a jam. Sometimes, you know, receivers at the college level are just bigger and stronger than the little corner across from, shrug them off and get downfield, or they don't get jammed at all. And it just seems like there's so many aspects of that position that Joe Blow average fan doesn't realize why that transition is so difficult.
Yeah, the jam is a bit, you're right. The jam is a big part of it. Getting off the jam in college is easy because if you're faster than somebody, it doesn't matter. You can run all the way to the sideline and get around the guy. But in the NFL, the guy is, if you're faster than him, he's crafty enough to realize all he has to do is take away that angle and he'll cut you off at the pass and you're gonna be running up his back. The techniques are light years difference. And one thing that a lot of people don't realize that the difference, the transition is in college, you know, and when I played in college, I played in the offense that I felt was pro style. But when the safety blitzes in college, in my college, and the quarterback didn't point him out, I didn't break hot on my route. Meaning I didn't shorten up my route to give the quarterback an opportunity to throw me the ball. But in the pros, if you don't see, you gotta read the defensive front, you gotta read the linebackers, you gotta know who the Mike linebacker is, you gotta know all this thing, you gotta know so much more football that a lot of people just don't realize. They think, oh, I'm just a receiver, I just run down the field, I don't really have to pay attention to the blocking schemes. And that's totally not the case.
That's very, very well said. And you mentioned your time at Michigan. I need to bring it up. What's going on in Ann Arbor right now? Can the spread O work in Ann Arbor?
Oh man, that's the million dollar question right now. I mean, I don't think the spread offense has actually worked that well in the Big Ten. I think Ohio State runs a version of it. They don't run the straight, you know.
Rich Rodriguez,
you know, quarterback right. Zone read all time. They don't do that much. So I just think that the one problem I have with Rich Rodriguez is this. He comes into a situation and he tries to put his system in. And I always thought the main point about being a coach was going into a situation, seeing the players you have, adjusting your system to your players. That's what Lou Holtz was really good at. And he comes in there and he says, I want to adjust the players to my system. And it, to me, that's not the sign of a good coach.
See, I'm with you. And I was a recruiting assistant for 3.5 years, and we couldn't get the same guys you guys got at Michigan. You know, we couldn't get NFL linemen. Jake Long wasn't coming to Pitt at that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys got those linemen, and the way I interpret it was we played against Rich Rodriguez at WVU when I was at Pitt, and he couldn't get upper echelon linemen either.
Yeah.
He couldn't pound you into the ground. You know, that year with Mike Hart and Jake Long and Chad Henne and players like crazy that you would kill for so you can run a pro offense. There's so few schools that are fortunate to get those guys to go against those principles and play things to make life easier on the linemen and not utilize tremendous wide receiver talent that you guys have had over the years at Michigan, including yourself. Such a long list. It just boggles my mind, and I'm just curious where an alumni stands on that.
I can go take it a step further. I think they're doing a disservice to the players that sign up for one of those offenses, because that doesn't translate over to the pros. I talked to a lot of scouts, and they were telling me that, you know what, when I look at a D offensive lineman, and he's playing in this scout, I mean in this spread offense, he says, I can't even evaluate him. They're not doing anything they're going to be doing on Sundays. So they'll go look at a guy who plays on a pro-style team just because they know exactly what they're going to get. And they don't get that when they get this spread offense. Tim Tebow is a perfect example. You know, it's a perfect example of how it is.
Yeah, and there's just too much money, too much resources of draft picks invested in these guys. You might as well take the guy from Ohio State or Penn State or, you know, a neighboring school that is similar talent-wise that doesn't have to make as drastic of a transition. And personally, I don't understand it, but I'm glad you were very candid about it.
Thank you.
And, hey, let's wrap it up, man. Thanks so much for coming in. You've been a tremendous guest. Best of luck with everything up there on campus. I hope everything works out for you, buddy.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right.
And now we are joined by Bobby Darin, author of Draft Season. Bobby, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. Bobby also writes for Rivals.com, extremely well-known college recruiting site, but they do an awful lot more. What do you do for them, Bobby?
Well, recently I've been covering the Rutgers beat the last few years while also doing Division I recruiting, college basketball. Basically, last few weeks been at spring practice out here in New Brunswick covering spring football. Also, you know, keeping an eye on the draft, stuff like that. Was out at the NFL Combine while doing various book promotions as well, book signings. I was in Indianapolis, Miami for the Super Bowl. Last week I was in Pittsburgh. So it's been a busy spring.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mentioned Pittsburgh. I'm here in Pittsburgh now, and I was with Pitt for 3 years as their recruiting assistant, and we recruited against Rutgers pretty heavy and recruited the state of New Jersey very, very heavy. And I'm sure it's the same as it's always been. It's a very talented, rich state. Does that still hold true?
Yeah, Pitt. And, you know, Pitt has been coming in and doing exceptionally well. I mean, Deion Lewis last year is the most prime example. Raymond Graham, actually his backup, I think, you know, was watching him in recruiting. My opinion was the best running back in the state of New Jersey. Deion Lewis kind of got ahead of him a little bit because he came in early for spring practice. But, you know, that's a prime example right there of, you know, two exceptional running backs. Pitt just came in and plucked out of Rutgers' backyard there.
Yeah, when I was there, Rutgers wasn't the powerhouse they are now. Not their powerhouse, but they didn't do a much, much better job of keeping their own within the state. And I don't think most people realize what a talent-rich state that is. And I give them all the credit in the world. They're much harder to get kids out of there now, from what I understand.
You know, but there's still the kids who want to leave and want to, you know, go out to a different school, go away for college. And Notre Dame comes in, you know, Florida tries to come in and scoop up a kid or two every year. So,
and
you know, the dynamic
well.
Is changing, but they still have to contend with a lot of major schools, Michigan as well. So, yeah, New Jersey is pretty heavily recruited.
It really is. And, Bobby, let's really get into your book here. Can you explain to everybody exactly what it is you did and what's going on with this book, Draft Season?
Sure. Well, I covered, you know, the NFL draft and the combine last couple of years, and also covered some guys that were training at a local facility called Test Sports in Martinsville, New Jersey. And, you know, the guys go there for 6 weeks before their pre-combine training. And a couple of years ago, I was watching Joe Flacco train there. Ryan Clady was also there for a short while, and Eric Foster from the Indianapolis Colts, kind of highlighted that group. I saw the progress they made, and in covering them, saw the immensity of work that they went through, you know, from the All-Star games to the combine to the pro days to the personal workouts leading up to the draft. And it was really a fascinating season. And, you know, when I looked and checked, there was no book that really delved into it. So I approached the owner who I had become friendly with and, you know, pitched that idea, you know, signed with a literary agent and, you know, went ahead and just did the research. 4 months, it was just basically up at that facility while they trained and then, you know, went across the country with these guys and really got the ins and outs of what it's like for a college football player trying to make it in the NFL draft.
That sounds pretty cool. I don't think most people realize how grueling it is from, let's say a senior that comes out is a draftable player. From his training camp, whenever they go to camp before his senior year, that young man really gets zero break until his rookie season is completed. And I think, you know, if you really add it up and go month by month, what exactly these young men have to do, everyone talks about these rookie walls during their rookie season and, you know, after playing an awful lot of games. Well, I'm surprised they're not even a bigger wall. Maybe you feel the same way, maybe you don't. But if you can kind of just spell out exactly what these guys do from the day they report to training camp, their final year of college, until their first year of being finished with their NFL season, it's a pretty amazing stretch.
Well, you know, it's funny, they kind of hit a wall in the draft season itself before they even get drafted, because from the time they finish, you know, their career in college, whenever that may be, the bowl game or what have you, you know, around January, they go to these training facilities where they're training 40 hours a week to work on their combine-specific events, you know, the 40-yard dash, the shuttle run, which is so important during that season. Then from there, you know, the combine to their pro days, they continue with that training. And once they hit the pro days, they're kind of like exhausted. That's what I like to compare to that wall that you talked about. And then, you know, they have to go to personal workouts and do all more interviews with personal visits with these teams. Then they get drafted and in the rookie camp, and then it's a whole new world. So it's like an ongoing process. You know, the guys, they do get exhausted. And people talk about the wall later in the season, but just through the draft season and in the training camp, they hit quite a few balls during that first year.
Yeah, that's a good point, just talking about this stage of it. And I guess right about now, some of them are able to exhale a little bit. You know, they're doing some personal workouts. They're going to different teams throughout the league, and I'm sure that's grueling, but at least you're done with the 40s, you're done with the verticals and the intense training, that maybe their bodies get a little bit of time to relax slightly before the draft.
Yeah, the guys love it when they're done with the 40s and that type of training, because it's so different from what they're used to doing their whole lives and training for a football season. And, you know, lately, in the last couple of years, in researching this book, talking to scouts and players, the teams they're not working out as many guys personally. They're not flying as many guys in. I don't know whether it's the economy or what have you, or maybe it's all the exposure that they are getting through these All-Star games, combines, and pro days, but not as many personal workouts have been taking place over the last couple of years. So it is kind of a time for the guys to breathe a bit of sigh of relief, but it is very stressful, particularly for those mid to late round guys who really don't know whether they'll get drafted or, you know, they won't have a job in a couple months.
Exactly. It's a giant job interview, and I just think you had a great point right now. Is these guys have been playing football since they could crawl, most of them. They've been playing football their entire lives. They have a regimen of what they do in the off season this time of year to prepare for the upcoming season. And this year, when they're done with school and they're going to the NFL, it's so different than anything they've done before. They're really not training to be football players. They're training to be combine guys. And
yeah.
And then they get drafted. They get shipped to their team like that next day and thrown a playbook. And then before you know it, you're playing four or five preseason games, which is something they've never done before, a 16-game schedule, maybe playoffs, against bigger, stronger, grown men who are faster and more physical, and there's more of a mental burden. It really amazes me that rookies do as well as they do anymore, to be honest with you.
And you know, they're one injury away from being unemployed as well. You know, that's the crazy thing about the NFL. You know, the players often refer to it as not for long. And, you know, it's a very stressful time. And going through it with these players, my guys that I followed were all, you know, mid-picks. So for the most part, they weren't guaranteed. And there was a lot of stress that went through that era. And even into the first year and talking to them, you know, there was still a lot of stress. They don't know if they're going to make it. You know, injuries happen, you know, at the spur of the moment. And a couple of my guys did get injured. They managed to hang during their first years. But that stress just continues.
Yeah, and what's interesting about those type of guys, too, is most of those were obviously stars in high school. They were the biggest fish in the pond. They go to college. They're starters. They're studs. They're very good players, even though they're considered a mid-round draft pick. Most of them probably didn't play special teams. And then you get to the Jets or the Rams or whoever, and they got a bunch of guys just like you and used a fifth or sixth round pick on you. You better learn how to cover kicks. You better learn how to be a gunner. You better learn what punt protection's all about. And I wonder how the transition went for those guys. And in general, I think that's another thing that people don't realize is you have to learn all new skills in addition to learning your position.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because, you know, that's where they were put up on a pedestal from the time they were kids playing football. But it's a very humbling experience, and the guys that I covered were pretty down to earth in the fact that they knew that this was what lies ahead of them. And, you know, they were trying to do whatever they could to get on the field. Morgan Trent, who I covered, plays with Cincinnati now. He was their nickelback this year, and I had to learn a whole new position, but, you know, said I'll do whatever I have to get on the field. Kind of similar, it was at Michigan. He had to switch to cornerback from wide receiver when he got there. You know, had Braylon Edwards, Jason Avant, Adrian Harris, and Steve Breston all ahead of him during his first year. So, you know, kind of, it was, you know, had to change positions just to play. So it was a similar, you know, similar setting when he got to the pros.
Well, Bobby, I really appreciate you coming on. It's a really interesting topic. I think we could go all day just talking about the process and every individual story you've probably seen over these last couple of years. It's pretty cool. And I think everybody out there needs to check out Draft Season. I'm going to, and to look you up on Rivals.com.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And yeah, books available nationally at Borders. You can get it at Barnes & Noble at the end of the month and Amazon.com. You can get deals on that or visit my site at BobbyDarren.com.
Very good. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
And now we are joined by Tom Martinez. He's a quarterback coach who's got his hands in quite a few fires, actually. Tom, can you explain to everybody out there what you're all involved in right now?
Well, I've been working with Football University doing football camps. I'm a quarterback coach, and I've been tutoring young men and then I work with some of the NFL players, so it's a, you know, kind of keeps me busy and really enjoy coaching. So, you know, that's what I've been doing.
I gotcha. Do you work with young quarterbacks as they prepare for the draft, or are you working with quarterbacks who are already in the NFL? You mentioned some of them, and I know you have a real heavy involvement with Tom Brady. You've also been involved with Jamarcus Russell, whose careers obviously have been, you know, both ends of the spectrum. You know, Russell was a first overall pick. Tom Brady was a late pick, winning Super Bowls like crazy, where Russell's been disappointing at the NFL level. I'm curious what your involvement is with both of them and with these NFL quarterbacks in general. Where do you start with them? What stage of their development do you get involved with?
Well, all different stages. I have young men that I'm working with now. They're 12 years old. I started Tom Brady when he was 12, and I still work with him. And so there's guys that are preparing for the draft. I get guys in the NFL that are trying to mechanic. I'm a mechanics type guy, so I leave the systems to the coaches that they play for. Although I do reading and that type of thing with them, it's more mechanical. And the problems that most quarterbacks that cause problems in their play are mechanically are involved. So I'm basically a mechanics guy of how to throw, footwork, that type of thing. And there's usually a tremendous difference in the people that I work with after we finish. And so for some guys, they're trying to get into the NFL. Other guys are trying to hang on And again, like with Tom Brady, he's trying to be the best that ever played. So each guy approaches it in a little different way. Jamarcus, I prepared him for the NFL draft, and I thought we did a really good job. And obviously, he was taken number one, and he showed really, really well. And he's young. He's an unbelievably talented young man. But, you know, he's young, and I think maybe his better days are in front of him. And there's that period of breaking in that, you know, sometimes you, the organization that you're with has something to do with it. Your work ethic has something to do with it. But basically, the talent is there, and I think you'll see some great things out of Jamarcus before it's all said and done. And so I work with, like I said, with young men from 12 years old to Tom Brady and everybody in between. So,
Coach, you know, I'm a scout by trade too, and I have a pretty good pulse of all the guys in the league right now. And personally, I think Jamarcus is the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL, the most physically gifted quarterback on the planet right now. Is there?
I agree.
Is there anyone that you've worked with over your years who's comparable?
Well, a long, long time ago, back in the 80s, I used to work the Stanford football camp with John Elway.
Ah, there you go.
And so we used to play catch, and we'd talk about it. And
your hands hurt a little bit after that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I could throw it with it. I could chuck it myself then, you know. But anyway, John Elway, and so when I saw Jamarcus, and I worked with him for about a month, prepared him for the draft. And he can do it all. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's why he showed so well in the LSU Pro Day. He's got touch. He can throw the ball, you know, ungodly distances. And he has a fastball, and he has a changeup, and he can do it all. He hasn't put it together. And the pro game is so much quicker. And I see some things that he's not doing now that we did when I worked with him. And yet, on the other hand, it's like a Mercedes car that you're driving 15 miles an hour. You know, it still has a Mercedes engine. And so I think that in his case, there's a Mercedes engine there. It's just a question of how fast he can make it perform at the level that they want him to, and I think he also wants for himself.
And we touched on Tom Brady, who's obviously the opposite end of the spectrum.
Right.
And you've known him for a very long time. You've worked with him for a very long time.
Right.
I think a lot of fans out there, you know, remember him at Michigan, but he wasn't a huge name at Michigan. I mean, he started a lot of years. He was very successful at that level. Mm. But I don't know that people remember what were his warts coming out. I mean, why everyone probably looks at him as a draft prospect now and says, why did all these teams miss on him, including the Patriots, over and over and over until they finally pulled the trigger on him? What were his faults? You know, what were his negatives at that point? And what's he done since then to become such a, you know, way below, you know, blow those expectations out of the water?
Well, I think one of the things, like when we did the TV show The Ride, and so we were looking for for the best high school quarterback that was under the radar in the country. And so one of my questions right in the beginning is, with a quarterback, how do you judge him? Do you look at statistics only? I look at the skill level. I look at their ability, because a system quarterback is a guy who's fortunate to play in a place, you know, some of the high schools now even throw the ball 50, 60 times a game, and then the young man's going to throw for 4,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. And yet you watch him on tape, and there might be another guy who throws the ball 15 times who's mechanically way better, and yet he isn't featured as often. So that was one of Tom Brady's problems, was that their high school football team ran the ball a lot, and he really, you know, didn't get to throw it that often. And they were basically, you know, a running team. And so one of the years, he probably threw it 12 times a year. And so other quarterbacks at the time were throwing it, you know, 25, 30 times. So statistically, he didn't have the yardage and that type of thing. The other thing with Tom Brady that, you know, is that he's not Michael Vick running the ball. And right. So the things that scouts look at, you know, vertical jump and those kinds of things, he's probably going to finish, you know, 20th. And yet, if you talk about following his career, he wins. And the greatest thing that Tom Brady does is he wins. And why does that happen? Now, obviously, you then have to be surrounded by great coaches, by all other great players. But there is a lot of quarterbacks on teams that come, you know, a little bit short instead of getting to the, you know, to the finish line. And with Tom Brady, he's the kind of guy who even you know, he'll call me now and he'll say, "I'm off, you know, I'm off, and I'm trying to hit one spot and I'm 6 inches off, and so can you come work with me?" And so his attention to detail and his desire to be great is unparalleled in regard to work ethic. And so, you know, he works his way and he wills his way to win, and he'll do whatever that takes in a legitimate way, through hard work, practice, watching tape, you know, asking for help when he needs it. Now, on the other hand, you know, Jamarcus, you know, doesn't ask for help, and at least he doesn't with me. And so it's one of those things where one young man is wise enough to say, "Look, I need help," and he gets it. You know, I work with him this year, and some of it was sequential, but I worked with Tom Brady this last year, and it was before the Jacksonville game, and he had a couple of things, and he had injuries, and he was off, and so we worked, and we talked on the phone, and I went back and worked with him, and the Jacksonville game, he went 23 for 26, and one pass was dropped. So here's a guy who's striving for perfection and goes to every small detail that it takes to get that done. And then you have another guy with a Cadillac engine who, you know, I think as he gets older and more mature will realize that mechanics. He's trying to play quarterback as an athlete instead of a technician. And at every level, I see high school kids that get away with athleticism, and people make a big deal out of kids who can run around and do things, and yet mechanically they're you know, as I'd say, they'd make an onion cry, and so that catches up with you sooner or later. And so you can only play so long, I don't care what your sport is, without being technically sound. And the guys who last that extra 4 or 5 years at the end of their career, when they're making a lot of money and they get an extra 4 years in, it's because they're mechanically sound and they can still help somebody, maybe not for a 16-game season. But, you know, Vinny Testaverde was a great example. I mean, he stuck around till he was 44 years old or whatever, and he's making a lot of money as a backup, and yet his mechanics were good. And if they got stuck and somebody needed him for a week or two, he can step in, and he's fundamentally sound, and he can win you a game or two, and then the other guy comes back. So technique and mechanics are things that, one, elevate your skill level. Number two, they keep you where you are. And I think at the end of your career, if you're mechanically sound, you stick around a few extra years to make, obviously, several million dollars.
Coach, one last thing here. And this time of year, everybody's talking about the draft, and you see on NFL Network and on ESPN, you'll see a lot of clips of Tom Brady running his 40, you know, which isn't his strong suit, like you said.
Right.
And just looking at that clip, you can say, "Oh, now I see why he was a six-round pick." You know, it's the last thing people see. It's not pretty. He's
right.
Gangly. You know, it takes a long time to get those 40 yards. But that just shows to me, you see him today, and he's such a different person just to look at. And his arm strength was considered average coming out of Michigan, and now there certainly is, you know, he has no problem delivering the football any way that is required of him.
Right.
You know, you mentioned his mechanics, and my question, I guess, to you is, explain to the seventh graders out there, somebody who isn't the football expert, but they hear the words mechanics.
Right.
What exactly is that, and explain it to somebody in layman's terms.
Okay.
And
great
the
question.
Arm strength issue, can your arm get stronger? Can you do specific exercises to make that ball come out of your hands with more velocity as you get older?
Yes, you can. Velocity, it's a combination of one of the things that happens, and I don't like this term, And I think it ultimately winds up hurting guys. There was one NFL quarterback that I worked with, and the poor guy, he was overweight trained. And I think a lot of high school coaches, or, you know, and even college coaches, they have quarterbacks lifting like a tackle. And there are, you can get so stiff that you're not flexible. And when you're not flexible, you don't finish your throws. You throw to a high point, and then you can't finish the throw. And so that kills velocity. And so velocity, I can teach velocity. And the example that I use is this, that the people talk about your arm isn't strong enough. And so kids and even coaches think that is weight trained. Well, if weight training was a major factor and strength was a factor, then why couldn't a tackle throw the ball better than a quarterback? So it isn't arm strength, it's arm speed. And arm speed is what creates velocity. If you were to throw a paper in a garbage can and you flipped it in there and you threw it real slow, if you wanted to throw it real hard, you would increase arm speed. So arm speed is what creates velocity, and that's why
a guy
like Drew Brees can throw the ball, you know, harder than or faster than or with more velocity than a tackle, because he has greater arm speed. And so that obviously, to me, that's one thing I teach, and I tell people that if you don't have arm speed, you're either a passer or a thrower. And when you think in terms of quarterbacks, you think of a Joe Montana. And Joe Montana was a passer, and he played in the West Coast offense. And a West Coast offense requires a quarterback to be a passer. And they're not going to throw necessarily with a tremendous amount of velocity, but they're going to be accurate. They're going to get rid of the ball quicker. They may probably have a shorter arm circle delivery, and the ball's out of their hand, and they read well. And then you're going to get guys that are throwers. And there are guys in the NFL now that are what I call throwers, and they can throw it, you know, 80 miles an hour, and they're not West Coast-type quarterbacks. And then they go to a system, and they take them as throwers, and they try to make West Coast quarterbacks out of them, and it doesn't work. And then you take a West Coast offense quarterback, and you say, okay, throw outs, comebacks, things that where the ball's going away from them further, and it doesn't work either. So to me, part of it is taking what the guy can do and fit the system to what he's able to do as far as throwing the ball goes. And then number two is having somebody around him that can teach him actually how to pass the ball and also how to throw the ball when it's required. And I think that's what I was so impressed with Jamarcus, is that he naturally has touch. He actually has velocity. And he did a drill when we were at LSU at the pro day, where he sat on the ground and he threw the ball he sat on the 50-yard line, and he threw the ball sitting down over the top of the goalpost, which is in the back end of the end zone. So it went 65 yards from sitting on the ground. So not that you're going to do that in a game, but that shows you the capability. And so that's where I was so impressed with him, is that he had it all. And yet, you know, he hasn't been able to perform to that level of skill that he actually has. So it's what I always tell people, it's not a flu shot. You can't go and you know, I give you a shot and all of a sudden you're Tom Brady. It's a tremendous amount of work. It's a tremendous amount of analysis. And yet, on the other hand, the thing that I think I do very well is I break people down as to what I think they need, and then I know how to teach it to them what they don't have. So if you're a passer, I'm going to work with you on how to throw the ball. If you're purely a thrower, I'm going to teach you how to pass the ball so that you become a complete quarterback, which then can use the full field and also use the full playbook, because some guys can't throw the playbook that the coach has because they can't throw the ball into the routes that they want to run.
That's a great point. And you get that a lot in the league, where you just see quarterbacks miscast in the system they're in, and there's so
absolutely
much, you know, coaching movement that they come in and they implement their own system, but the guys in place don't fit it. But, Tom, hey, thanks so much for coming on. You're a wealth of knowledge at the quarterback position, and I could pick your brain for hours and hours, to be honest with you. But
okay, well, I enjoyed it, and, you know, you do a great job in informing the fans of these things, and it's always intriguing, because it's not a precise science, and that's why the draft, You know, when there are probably eight quarterbacks this year, and any one of them could be Tom Brady, and any one of them could be, you know, somebody else that never made it too. So, you know, it's not a precise deal, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. And yet, what I think is, in all fairness to the quarterbacks, is they're responsible for a lot of it, but the environment that they're put in also has a lot to do with their ultimate success. So you'll see guys fail in one system, and all of a sudden somebody will see those skills in him, and they'll take him, and he'll flourish in another environment. So anyway, it was a pleasure, and I, you know, good luck with what you're doing. I think you're doing a great job, and it's an honor to be part of it.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
Quick slants.
That was some great stuff there from Coach Tom Martinez, and hopefully we'll have him on again later on this season during the off season when we've talked about doing more shows about talking about like quarterback mechanics and the difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3. He'd be a great guest for something like that.
Yeah, he really would. And you and I were just talking off the air briefly. You know, the word mechanics is so generic to people, and there's a lot of draft nicks out there reading prospect, you know, profiles right now and say, oh, he's got bad mechanics. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean he doesn't transfer his weight properly? Is his release point not where it's supposed to be? I mean, mechanics are from your toes all the way through your body, you know, to your release point. And there's a that in itself could be an hour podcast.
And it sounds like Coach, too, that seems to think that mechanics is something that you can fix.
Sure.
It's something that you can work on and fix, and you could be a capable quarterback in the NFL.
Sure. Yeah, I thought he had a lot of good points, and I could have picked his brain a long time.
Now, I don't want people to think that I think he could take me and make me into a capable quarterback, somebody with some sort of talent.
I bet he could make you a better quarterback than you are today, though.
I'll bet he probably could. but I'll stick here in a chair and a microphone. A couple of quick slants that we want to get to. You talked about the Donovan McNabb trade with Amani Toomer. Another sort of, I don't know, related story to that is the Rams released quarterback Mark Bulger. People seem to think that this is the end-all. Sam Bradford is your number one draft choice.
Yeah, I think that's the writing's exactly on the wall for that. His release came at an opportune time. I think they saw his, you know, Bradford's workout. That was enough. You could get back in the media rooms and say, yeah, we saw enough of Bradford to know that that's going to be our pick. So yeah, that makes sense. I don't have a great landing spot for Bulger, though. I was asked that in my chat yesterday. I'm not sure where he fits right now, and I still need to kick that one around.
All right. Staying with the Redskins theme, Adam Schefter, our ESPN insider, reporting the Redskins will not trade Albert Haynesworth. There was a report earlier in the week that the Skins had originally offered up Albert Haynesworth for Donovan McNabb and that they are still looking to trade him. Adam Schefter says the Redskins are not looking to trade Albert Haynesworth.
This is interesting on a couple levels. From what I understand, he got a $21 million bonus like two Thursdays ago or very recently. And they wanted to trade him before they wrote him the check for $21 million. And he's a little less attractive if he shows up at your place and you have to write him a check for $21 million on top of paying him a reasonable salary. So now that he has that check and he has got the bonus, he's a little more attractive because you just invested a $21 million check in the guy, and he really can't get around that fact. But it drives me a little crazy, and anyone that's paid attention to what I do on ESPN, it makes me bonkers that teams switch to a 3-4 so whimsically, it seems. And, you know, last year at this time, they just broke the bank for the best defensive player in the league, Albert Haynesworth. And I think he can fit any system, but to put him in a 3-4 isn't the best way to handle him. I think he could be a nose. I think he could be a defensive end in the 3-4. But he's an upfield defensive tackle that can be so disruptive. And that just makes me crazy. When you look at the Redskins personnel, let's go to a 3-4. It makes no sense to me because their defense was very solid last year. I don't think London Fletcher is a good fit. I don't think Haynesworth properly used. So it just goes back to being stable year after year and using your personnel and having everybody on the same, you know, steering the same direction and putting the oars in the water the same way. And it could be a tough year with the transition.
Redskins are also talking to the agent for Flozell Adams, who was released by the Cowboys.
Adams has become a very much of a liability in protection. He wasn't the quickest guy to begin with. He supposedly has hearing problems as well, and he's well known for jumping off sides. A lot of penalties have always followed him as well. In addition to those, he's a semi-dirty guy. But he can still pave the way in the run game, and I think he's better than who they have right now. I still expect Russell Okung to be the fourth pick overall to the Skins and be their left tackle, but Flozo might be that guy you run behind and make him a right tackle. He's a guy you run behind in short yardage situations, and I have no doubt in my mind that he will be employed next year.
Bad news from Cleveland. Browns defensive lineman Sean Rogers pleaded not guilty during a brief hearing Saturday morning at Cleveland Municipal Court. Rogers remains free on bond. He was charged with carrying a concealed weapon after authorities said he had a loaded gun in his carry-on bag at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport on Thursday last week.
Well, from what I understand, having a loaded gun in an airport is illegal, right? If he had it, I don't know how you plead not guilty, but I wish him the best of luck.
It's another one of those stories that seem to follow Sean Rogers, though.
Right, and you wonder when people are just going to get tired of his routine. If he wasn't such a tremendous player, and he really is, he's as good as any nose tackle in this league, I'm sure he would have been shipped out long ago.
Former Bears defensive end Alex Brown reached an agreement with New Orleans. Brown's two-year deal is worth just under $6 million total, according to Adam Schefter.
This move makes sense, and it's the first thing that New Orleans, the Super Bowl champs, have really done to add to their roster. They've had some people leave, including Charles Grant, the starting defensive end. So this was very much a need position, and it's much lesser now. I think this is a good signing for both team and player.
The Lions acquired guard Rob Sims from the Seahawks. The Seahawks traded Sims and their first of two 2010 seventh-round draft choices to the Lions for defensive end Robert Henderson and Detroit's 2010 fifth-round draft choice. This was announced earlier this week.
He's not a tremendous player, but Seattle is going to more of a zone-blocking, athletic, Denver old-school running game, and he doesn't fit that. He's a masher. He's a wide body guard, and that's exactly what they want to do in Detroit. They want to be a very physical downhill team. I think this is an excellent acquisition, and this is one of those ones that goes under the radar. But if you look at the Detroit Lions offensive line, everyone assumes that it's awful, and it has been bad. Don't get me wrong. But Jeff Backus is a better left tackle than people realize. Sims is a legitimate starting guard. Rayola is a legitimate starting center. You know, Gosser Chairless at right tackle has upside. He was a first-round pick. You would hope he gets better, and he got better as the year went on last year. Their line might not be putrid. It might not be that bad. And for people to think that taking a Coon at number two is an option for them, I think that's absolutely nuts. You have to jump all over Sue and be thrilled about it.
And the last note here, the Jets are interested in Jason Taylor. They've had him in for a couple of visits. He's visiting with them again today.
I bet this gets done, and I think it'd be a real good fit for them to use him in limited snaps, have him in the same meeting room as Vernon Golston, who's been a big bust since he's got there. Taylor's a very professional approach to the game, very much a technician as a pass rusher, still very solid against the run. They just need to keep his snaps low and not beat him up too much, but I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I can tell you as a Patriot fan, I do not want to see Jason Taylor in a Jets uniform.
I don't blame
him. I'm sure there's some Dolphin fans that also, for different reasons, don't want to see Jason Taylor.
Yeah, he's not done.
But we are done. That'll do it for today's edition.
I set you up so well there. I'm getting good at this.
You really did. That's going to do it for today's edition of Football Today. Please keep sending those emails to footballtoday@espnradio.com. We didn't have time to get to them today, but you never know. In a future episode, we might. I've got a few more surprise guests up my sleeve, maybe. I don't know. We hope everything's going well with Jeremy. People ask on my Facebook all the time, what's going on with Jeremy? When's he going to be back? The only thing I can tell you is I don't know. I wish I did, but I don't. We hope everything's good with him.
Absolutely.
Until then, you're stuck with me. You're stuck with Matt Williamson. I think we've been doing a pretty good job the past month or so, and you're going to get more of us probably in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely, buddy. Let's keep it churning. And like you said, wish the best for JG. Get him back in here.
And on that note, there you have it.
The music provided on today's show is from Mevio's Music Alley, Will Chryski's Metal Mayhem. Check it out at music.mevio.com. For more football talk, be sure to check out Football Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
How should I introduce him? Does it make...
Monty Toomer, former Giants great wide receiver.
Fair enough. Emphasize the great.
Yeah, real heavy on the great.
How about world champion?
I don't remember that Super Bowl. Sorry.
Yeah, who beat the Patriots, ended their perfect. Oh, are you a Patriots fan?
That Super Bowl never played. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right.